Moncrief on News Talk.
Last week, the Houses of the Oireachtas passed the long-awaited defamation bill intended to modernise our libel laws. However, not everyone is satisfied with it, especially in relation to so-called slap cases, legal actions usually taken by wealthy individuals or companies to silence critics by tying them up in lengthy and expensive cases. Jessica Nivonin is head of policy and campaigns on Index on Censorship. Jessica, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Have slap cases been a big problem in Ireland?
Well, in 2022, the Coalition Against Slaps in Europe, which is a coalition of organisations across Europe, which includes ourselves, Index on Censorship, our collective report identified Ireland as a jurisdiction of concern in the EU alongside Croatia and Malta. Malta, of course, being the country where Daphne Caruana Galizia, the journalist, was killed by a car bomb. And at the time she was killed, she was facing nearly 50 slaps. So I think that's saying something for Ireland's to be up there with Malta. Of course, the difficulty with slaps is that so few slaps actually ever make it all the way to court. They usually happen through the litigation process, through the threat of legal action. So it's really difficult to know exactly how many cases we would see in Ireland. But anecdotally, from speaking to people who are affected, we know that it is a problem that is silencing people.
Yeah. And is Ireland still, or at least has it been up to this point, a venue for libel tourism?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why Ireland is an attractive jurisdiction for libel tourism is because of the costs associated with defending a case, with taking a case too, but especially with defending a case, that it's up there. It's not quite as high as the UK, but certainly it's one of the higher costs in the EU. So from an EU perspective, especially in terms of libel tourism, it is attractive because, of course, if you're threatened with legal action in Ireland, you will quickly figure out that it's going to cost you at least tens, if not hundreds of thousands of euro to see that case all the way to trial. And that has a real deterrent effect. People will decide in many instances to not defend themselves. They'll realise that it's just cheaper to sit down and shut up, basically. So that is, in some cases, what ends up happening. And if it's public interest speech, if these are journalists, academics, environmentalists, NGOs, whistleblowers that are being affected with legal actions, that has a cost for all of us because they're speaking out in the public interest. And it means that they're less inclined to do so. And these are the precise individuals that tend to be affected by slaps successfully because they don't have the resources in many cases, the money, the time, the energy required in order to fight the cases. So it's a threat to all of us and to democracy itself.
Now, the legislation, though, one of the things the legislation seems to want to do is to get rid of slaps, or at least greatly diminish the numbers of them. In your view, has it done that, or is it going to do that?
That's right. So this has been a process coming about, really, as I said, from the murder of Daphne Caruana Galizia in 2017, October 2017, that slaps began to be put on the radar, and that resulted in a Europe-wide campaign to have them stopped. And in 2022, the European Commission brought in the EU anti-slap directive, which basically tells, as any directive does, tells all EU member states, this is the goal, to get rid of slaps in a set amount of time, so in a 2-year period, and then member states can decide themselves how they do that. So in Ireland, in an Irish context, the government decided to transpose this bill in part, at least through the defamation bill, which was already coming through. It was already had been under review and they were working on it. So they have put in the directive into that. But that's the first problem. That's the first issue that we have with this piece of legislation, is that the EU anti-slap directive extends to all slap cases, not just slap cases brought through defamation, because slaps can be brought defamation is just the vehicle for a slap. Any piece of legislation can be used in a way to harass someone legally. It could be privacy, it could be data protection, copyright, and so on. So the fact that that this piece of legislation, you know, the Minister O'Callaghan has said that it only covers defamation, slaps brought through defamation, because this is the defamation bill. That's fair enough. But the government has given no indication as to how they intend to transpose the directive more generally so that it includes the other causes of action like privacy and so on. And once they return from the summer recess, they'll have approximately 7 months to do so, because the deadline to transpose the directive is May next year. And for those of us who have been following closely, we're especially sceptical about that timeframe, because the initial review of the Defamation Act 2009 was published about 7 years late, and it took another 2 years for the bill to materialise. So I don't think we can be expected to believe that the government will be able to transpose the rest of the anti-slap directive with appropriate consultation in the space of only 7 months.
Yeah. Now, another issue with the defamation bill is it hasn't reversed the burden of proof. Now, could you explain what that means to people?
That's right. So the issue, as you say, the legislation omits key components of the directive, including Article 12, which is around the reversal of the burden of proof during the early dismissal mechanism, as it's called. So the early dismissal mechanism is a really important part of an anti-slap law, because it allows for abusive proceedings to be thrown out at an early stage in court. And this is really important because it saves the slap target time, money and energy. It makes them, it makes it possible basically for them to defend their case. And the EU directive provides for there to be a reversal of the burden of proof in the early dismissal mechanism. And that means that the burden of proving that a claim is well-founded rests on the person who is bringing the action. So that is, and that's absent from the bill. So we don't know why that is. For genuine claimants, that extra hurdle of proving that a case, you know, that it's well founded, it won't really matter because they should be able to easily prove that. But for anyone who wants to abuse the system, to, you know, to intimidate journalists, activists or ordinary citizens, it's a green light. They can tie you up in court at minimal risks, minimal risks to themselves. So that's something that could have been easily put into the legislation, and it hasn't been.
Yeah. Now, I suppose what that means, just to kind of try and rephrase that, is that if a journalist publishes a story about, say, a politician and makes an allegation about them, that that politician can sue the journalist, but it's up to the journalist to prove that what they've written is true, not on the politician to prove that it's not true. The politician just has to send a letter and off we go.
Yeah, exactly. And so the journalist has to do it. It takes a lot of time to prepare a case and everything. And the politician in this instance could just sit back and relax and just watch the process happen. Now, if there's an early dismissal mechanism, there will be the onus on the politician as well to say, well, this is why, you know, this is why my cause of action is legitimate, you know, and you can, and they can show it. And of course, the journalists will fight, you know, contest that in court. But the point is that it's a deterrent, and it will make people, especially and those who are bringing abusive causes of action, it should make them think twice about it. And that's the purpose of this. And because at the moment the courts are tied up with very long wait times for defamation and other actions, and we don't want our courts to be used to be abused. We want them to be used for genuine legitimate purposes.
Yeah, and this legislation also, as I understand it, doesn't protect people from slaps if they're issued in other jurisdictions.
That's right. So if you're, for example, an Irish author who lives in Dublin and you get sued in, let's say, the US, you might try to ignore that action if you don't go to the US or whatever. But it could mean that if it's found against you there, it could be enforced in Ireland, and you know, you could be liable for damages. Now, the US is probably a poor example because of the First Amendment, but the reason why the US has come to mind is because They did adopt the Speech Act in 2010, which is basically make sure that the US doesn't recognize foreign libel judgments. It makes them unenforceable. And that came about because a US author had been sued in the UK and was, I think, liable for damages of £10,000. And so in order to protect the First Amendment in the US, they brought in this piece of legislation to stop foreign libel judgments from being enforced. And so that's what the directive has told member states to do as well, is to protect EU residents from, falling victim to foreign libel judgments. But for some reason, Ireland hasn't included that in the legislation either. Yeah. We don't know why. Yeah.
Juries, now this legislation has passed, we're still going to have defamation cases in front of juries. Is that the case?
Well, at the moment, that's not included in the legislation. That there's not a lot. So, in the context of our work with Index and through the Ireland Anti-Slap Network that we work with in Ireland, we haven't really taken a position on juries. There's not a lot to say about juries in the context of SLAP, in the context of SLAPs, but it has been surprising from an EU context how much attention juries have taken in the scope of this discussion. To my knowledge, Ireland is only one of two countries with juries and defamation cases alongside Sweden. So, the move to get rid of juries in defamation cases isn't unusual in a European-wide context. Yeah, it's been interesting seeing how much attention that's gotten over the last few years now, really.
Jessica, thank you very much for speaking with us. That was Jessica Nivonin there, Head of Policy and Campaigns at Index on Censorship.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.